Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It's what we do.
Here's John Williams.
Pardon me, I was clearing my throat there. Hi, it's John. It is 9:13, and we are in the Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago, weekdays 9 till 12 noon. I'm sorry, I'm off to a scratchy start this morning. I'm better than I sound, which isn't good in this biz. I'm fine. I just, my whole voice has decided to live in the sinus cavity behind my nose. And I hate it when that happens.
You sound good.
Okay.
Do you have a real tree at home? Because we were talking about that earlier.
How that they can makes you
sneeze and scratchy throat.
Nah, I just
from the mold.
Got a bit of a cold. We don't have a tree up at all this year.
What?
I know. Brenda and I have had as many as 4 or 5 in our house any given year at any given time during Christmas. But this year, we just kind of, we're undoing stuff. We're living in a smaller condo now. 1,300 square feet, which is a closet in Naperville. It's just a smaller space. And Brenda got out the pillows and some of the tchotchkes, and she did the stuff. And our place looked pretty red and green. And she says, you know, I don't think we need to drag the tree out. To which, for many American men, a beam of light would come down from heaven. Oh, what are you kidding me? This is the perfect wife. I don't have to put up a tree.
Wasn't this your pre-lit tree you were so happy about?
We have a pre-lit tree.
Yeah.
And I'd go saw one down. I would go all Clark Griswold if she wanted. But Brenda just kind of looked around the place and looked at our energy levels and said, you know, I don't think we need to do that. It's a short season, et cetera, et cetera.
I got really lucky. On the day after Thanksgiving, I come home from work at 1 p.m. and my husband put the tree up and the decorations.
See, that's perfect. That's just amazing.
Fantastic. But don't you like to do them?
Nope.
I have to do my ornaments. I have, because I have to look at each one of them and go, oh, there's one from the kid. Oh, you know.
I know. I am gonna miss that a little bit, but not so much that I'm gonna.
You are really getting old.
I am not. I have these lucid dreams where I can't move a thing, thinking of you in my bed. You may be hearing this for the first time. This is you were my. Juice WRLD, he's the young rapper who passed away due to cardiac arrest at Midway Airport over the weekend. I'll do it over again. I didn't want to. So I've been listening to a little of his music, and it sounds like the stuff my sons are playing a lot. And in fact, over the weekend, I got a text message after the word went out that Juice WRLD had passed away from my 30-year-old son, Grant, who was quite despondent. He said, I'm really down about this. I love this guy, love his music. He's this up-and-coming, I don't know that you call that rap or hip-hop, but whatever that kind of music is, a lot of people were really catching on to it, and he's suddenly passed away. No signs of foul play, say the police in Chicago. An autopsy is scheduled for today. In a statement, Juice WRLD's record label said the young talent made a profound impact on the world in such a short period of time. The rapper-singer, who was born in Chicago, I'm reading from the Sun-Times now, and raised in South Suburban Homewood Flossmoore, graduated in 2017 from Homewood Flossmoore. Kids at that school knew him as a super-talented musical kid. Juice WRLD is what he went by, helped spearhead the buzzing emo rap movement, which blended musical elements of emo rock, such as gentle guitar riffs and soul-bearing lyricism, sort of what we were hearing there, with the deft wordplay and crisp sonic signifiers of rap music. In Juice WRLD's case, the end product was heart-on-the-sleeve pop that exhibited a vulnerability not always associated with mainstream hip-hop. His major label debut album, Goodbye and Good Riddance, went platinum and featured his breakout hit you are listening to there, Lucid Dreams, a 6 times platinum success that heavily samples Sting's 1993 song, Shape of My Heart. In an interview last year with the New York Times, Juice WRLD claimed he had stopped taking Xanax and said he was trying to curtail his drug use. I smoke weed every now and then. I slip up and sometimes do what's poor judgment, he said. We'll see maybe if drugs were part of his demise or if something bizarre happened. But what a shame. And I didn't really appreciate the loss from my son's perspective. Until I started to think about it a little bit more. What musical artist in your lifetime whose sudden passing really knocked you off your socks? I saw a picture the other day of the Today Show cast when they were getting the word that John Lennon had passed away, when Kurt Cobain died, when who died? It could have been Elvis Presley, and you saw it coming, but sometimes it's obviously quite sudden.
Prince. Oh, that was a big one for me.
We were in Europe at the time, Mary, and when Prince died, just to give you a sense of what his influence was, the Eiffel Tower was bathed in purple lights. Oh. They put purple on the Eiffel Tower, and we were walking through a French market just trying to, you know, have a nice vacation, and Prince music was blaring from all the speakers in the French markets.
Wow.
Yeah. Amy Winehouse was, you know, just made me mad. But I sure remember feeling a sense of loss for music we didn't get when I heard that Amy Winehouse had passed away. Who comes to mind for you? My number's 312-981-7200. Call or text, tell me who it was and how you felt when that happened. You don't have to be a big music head for that. And it could be somebody a long time ago. Heck, it could be the Big Bopper, for that matter. But I don't know.
You know, there were a lot that I guess that I grew up listening to, and I would think when they died, it wasn't really all that surprising. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's been more recently, like Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, people like that.
Yeah. What's the age at which it seems these stars are most vulnerable? That is, Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix, I think it's 26 or 27.
Yeah, I think it was 27, Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who, and I don't know if, you know, maybe that's where you start to get frustrated with your career or the drugs catch up with you or the lifestyle does, what it is. But that seems to be a particularly hard age for some of these people to get through.
They make it through there. They can live like Mick Jagger and everybody else in their 70s.
And then
70s.
There are people like the Rolling Stones, right?
Ringo Starr.
I know. You think you have no reason to expect to have been alive.
Yes, exactly.
Gina, you're on WGN. Who was it for you, Gina? You're on the air.
David Bowie.
Yeah.
David Bowie was my guy. I mean, I used to joke when I was in my 20s that I wanted to have his love child.
Yeah.
And now I have a dog that we got like a week after he passed, and his name is Bowie.
Yeah, I'll bet you're not. I'll bet you're not alone in doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a tremendous artist. I did get to see him in concert. And, you know, you really didn't know that he had been so sick with his cancer. And he kind of kept it very, very quiet. You know, it wasn't like this well-known thing, you know, until he passed.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of calls about this. I really appreciate your call. Thanks, Gina.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. How about Ron over on line 5? Ron, you're on WGN. Who was it for you?
Yeah, to me, it was Jim Croce. What a talent. And with that loss and that plane crash,
yeah,
a tremendous loss.
I think about him, too. I mean, you know, if I'm listening to oldies music, every time one of his songs come up, you think, this guy is so good, so good. I had one of my first albums was a Jim Croce album, and no more.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to mention that, too. I was in college when he was...
Thanks for the call, Ron.
At the height of his popularity and when he died. And that one did kind of resonate with me.
And it seemed like the three, like, people that it was all in a row or something, like around the
Harry
same time.
Harry Chapin, same time.
John Denver and Jim Croce. The three of them were, like, very similar, you know, with folk style type of... The three of them, you know, crushed me, I remember.
Gosh, I remember John Denver. We were here, we started playing John Denver music. And, you know, it was so fun or easy to make fun of John Denver's hominess, his corniness,
his glasses,
his that just, you know, feel good aw shucks kind of, and then you step back and listen to it, you go, there's nothing wrong with this is all good, this is all good.
And it Calypso seemed... Every time I hear Calypso, I just love that song.
Susan, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? Hi, Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, I am calling to say it was Ricky Nelson for me.
Yeah.
I think it's because he was on TV, every week with his family. And I was a young kid at the time.
Oh,
and
yeah,
had a crush,
sure.
Had a major crush on him, and I saw him every week on his show.
Yeah.
And that just was stunning. And when I hear his music here and there on my oldies station, I still picture him, and I still sort of can't believe he's gone. And even though it was that far back.
Yeah, that's a fond memory and a sad one, too, isn't it? All these are sort of that way. The text line's lit up, of course, now. Thanks for the call. Stevie Ray Vaughan, Tom Petty, John Denver, John Denver, John Denver, Whitney Houston. I'll tell you, for some of these people, you know, my reaction was just so sad and so sudden. And then for some of them, for some reason, I was angry. You know, I said
Whitney Houston, I was mad.
Whitney Houston, I was mad.
Yeah.
I was just really angry.
Michael Jackson, I was furious.
at the lifestyle that these people led and that their families and handlers allowed them to lead, that you knew was eventually going to take a toll on them. Amy Winehouse was the same way. If you see the documentary, Amy, it's from her adolescence to her death. You could just watch this girl's passing coming. John Lennon. A few of you are calling in or texting in to say what also Bobby on line 4 wants to say. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. Who was it for you?
The writer and singer, Fat Guy in a Little Coat.
Chris Farley, right?
Chris Farley. Just died too fast, too soon. I was driving to work after high school, and I heard that he died on the radio.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we missed out on all those movies and TV appearances we could have had.
Think of all the joy, all the fun and laughter. Yeah, it's 9:27. Juice WRLD, 21 years old, Homewood Flossmoor. You didn't know much about him. Maybe your kids did, but he has passed away in autopsy today. Selena said one of you. A few of you said Karen Carpenter, Dan Fogelberg, John Denver, John Denver. David Bowie was so impressed with the Museum of Contemporary Art exhibition. Still can't listen to Black Star, the album released just days before his death. I don't want to say that this is generational, but one of you said Mozart. So I remember when I was listening to the radio, oh wait, it hadn't been invented yet, but when Mozart died, it just a little bit of me went with him.
She told me put my heart in the bag, ain't nobody gets hurt, not running from your love.
9:41, this is Juice WRLD again.
Now I'm digging up a grave for my past.
I mentioned earlier this weekend my son sent me a text and he said Juice WRLD passed away. Grant was actually on the road with his wife. They were visiting friends in Cincinnati. They heard the word and he knows that I don't know who Juice WRLD is, but he was so touched by it. He reached out to me via text and said, you know, you should look into this guy, listen a little to this, read a little bit about this. It touched a 31-year-old, and maybe your 19-year-old, and maybe you too. But he was 21 years old, Homewood Flossmoor graduate, and strangely, due to cardiac arrest, sitting on a private jet, I guess, at Midway, passed away, an autopsy today. We'll find out a little bit more, but it just made me think, well, that didn't resonate with me. It sure sounds like a talented young man, and what a loss. What a loss for the music we won't have going forward. It made me think of other artists who did strike you and me that way. And as I said a little while ago, when Kurt Cobain passed away, I was not a big fan. I mean, I knew who he was and what the music was, and it was important, but it just wasn't what I chose to listen to. But I found myself getting agitated at some of the... And that's so inappropriate, you know? I mean, these people fight demons, and artists have worlds that I don't understand, so I should not judge, and I hope I wasn't, but yet that was one of my emotions. I was just angry at the loss. And you may have felt the same way when somebody died young who had all of that talent in front of them. And boy, we've been getting a lot of calls and texts about you remember where you were when. Glenn Frey, John, the Eagles music always affected me. Some of you sweetly remembering Karen Carpenter. Scott Hutchison of Frightened Rabbit, John. For me, it was Luciano Pavarotti. Tom Petty, Stevie Ray Vaughan, 224 texted in and said, when I was in high school, Tupac Shakur died. It was rough for the whole school. And then some of you are remembering not just musical artists, but comedians and things like that. Prince, yeah, for sure. Robin Williams. Boy, there's one to just give you a little pause, eh? Luther Vandross, Karen Carpenter, Michael Hutchins. Lead singer of the NXS. John, oh my God, I forgot Patsy Cline. Yeah, so there's all eras there.
It's kind of morphed into not just musicians, but celebrities.
Yeah.
Right.
Is the one that comes. I thought you were going to have an athlete, a player whose sudden demise just took your breath away. And I don't know that, you know, sometimes baseball players or somebody you find out about has passed away strangely on the road or something like that. Then there's football players that are dying way too young. None come to mind right
away.
I mean,
I'm probably like a lot of people that the celebrity death that probably was the one of the biggest moments of my life was John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's not a performer, not an entertainer.
I'm thinking of Walter Payton today that way,
yeah,
too.
Except I think everybody knew he was ill at the time, and it kind of, you know, it was terrible. It was a tragedy. I think it was more than when everybody found out how sick he was.
Yeah, that was strange, wasn't it? And how awkward that was, because you knew Walter wasn't doing well. You didn't know what to say about it.
Yeah,
that got some people in trouble. Dennis, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, John.
Hey.
I'm sure you remember who Marilyn Monroe was.
Yes, I've heard of her.
Well, I was 6 years old when she died, and my mother said she killed herself. Okay, we couldn't believe it. And as we watched her movies over the years, we began to wonder what really happened. But in later years, I battled alcohol addiction for 25 years, and I learned people have depression. To try to understand what someone else is going through is impossible until we've been there ourselves.
Yeah, that's well put, Dennis. Thanks for the call. And that's why, you know, when we scratch our heads in wonder or even get angry, I think we need to just step back and not be that version of ourselves. I appreciate your call. It's 9:45. Neil Steinberg in the Chicago Sun-Times today wrote about the Peloton ad. Have you seen the Peloton ad? Have you guys been kicking this thing around?
We talked a little about it this morning, yeah.
His piece today is pretty funny. So I missed it. You guys, Cochran and you, were talking about the Peloton ad?
Yeah, Steve did mention it a little bit because of the enormous reaction to it, the aftermath of it.
Now, Steve's over in the news desk, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look that up for me, Steve, but do you see anything about the valuation of Peloton and what's happened to that company since they ran that ad?
I don't think it's suffered. I think it's up significantly so far today, even.
Maybe that makes sense. I mean, it was blame, Neil Steinberg reminds us, for Peloton stock dropping 15%. It lost a $1.5 billion in market valuation in a few days because they ran an ad. Al, if we have the Peloton ad, cuts 1, 2, and 3, we broke it into little tiny pieces. The gist of it is in the first cut. Let me know when you can play that, Ms. Garris, and then we'll run it for you. You say thumbs up, go.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time ride.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited. Let's do this. 5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am. 6 a.m. Yay.
Rising with the sun.
That was totally worth it.
Let's go, Grace in Boston. 50 rides.
She just said my name.
So there she is. She gets it. She's happy and excited at Christmas. Then she takes her first ride. She's a little worried, a little frightened about this journey. And she's making a video log, a vlog of her year-long journey riding the Peloton. She looks great when she gets it. She looks great at the end of the commercial, too. She's got a lot of money, nice kid, handsome husband, beautiful house, rich clothes. And now she's got a very expensive stationary cycle. And they ran this commercial telling folks, hey, you ought to be part of this journey, too. And the thing tanked. Somebody said over the weekend, it makes me wonder if any of the stock market valuations are just a house of cards, right? Like if one ad can sink a company, then maybe the company's not all that in a bag of chips. But I'm wondering, did anybody, because the other thing that doesn't make sense to me is if you said, okay, I saw that ad. And now, you're not going to buy a Peloton? I mean, that's what you presume would cause the value of the company to drop, was because people weren't placing orders or you were afraid they weren't going to buy the cycle anymore. Did anybody look at that and go, oh, maybe I won't get the Peloton? And if so, why?
I think those daily fluctuations are day traders, basically. You know, they're not
jumped out.
They're not a reflection of the long-term value of a company.
Yeah. So sure, a reflection of how, I don't know, subjective a TV commercial can be. Neil Steinberg was writing about this in the Sun Times. You may have seen him today. Hey, Neil, it's John. How are you? Good morning.
Hey, John, I'm good. Every day you're on the front page of the paper is a good day. Although you're right, I'm looking at the stock. It's up 5% today. So, you know, the 15% is what caught my eye because, you know, normally stock doesn't tank off an ad. And the commercial didn't, you know, to me it's like any other stupid commercial where hubby gives his wife, you know, a truck or something. And it doesn't have, it's not a real world thing anyways. Part of it, I think, is people mistake stuff that happens on the web for being significant. You know, people, it's like a big outrage machine, and people are outraged over everything.
Yeah.
It depends what the mainstream media, so to speak, stops and decides is significant.
But let me ask you this. Do you think the giving, is it inappropriate to give your wife an exercise machine for Christmas? Is that part of your problem with the ad?
First of all, I don't have a problem. I was reporting on the, people are like, oh, you're making a big deal of this. I'm like, no, I'm reporting on people making a big deal of it. I guess to me, the key is whether your wife wants a Peloton or not. You know, to me, anyone who's married, if you're going to drop $2,200 on something, the desire for surprise is lost to the desire for, you know, as Marshall Fields used to say, give the lady what she wants. You know, I don't think that every woman who's trying to be fit is oppressed by her husband. I think this is one of those things. The point of the column, which is completely lost, obviously, people tend, like, they see the headline or something and they write to me. I'm like, hey, here's a thought. Read the column. Get back to me. The point of the column is that, what was that? I lost my own point. You asked me a question, John. I
asked you if it was inappropriate to give the exercise machine to your wife for Christmas, and you said, well, that wasn't the real point. The point was I was just reporting on the criticism of it, and look what happened as a result. You weren't maybe taking umbrage with the ad per se yourself, huh?
No, I guess the ad is no stupider than any other ad, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
The
point of the column is that this is a small battle. Okay, I point out, I said, when you look at what's happening to women in this country, you know, that anyone would care about this at all is sort of, to me, it's almost a kind of denial. Although people are allowed to be upset. There's so much stuff. Everything is said online, and so you can't really say why you're wasting your time on this. I certainly wasted my time on it. But it does seem like such an odd, you know, given, and I know you don't want to get into the politics too much, given who the president is, given what's happening in state houses across the country to, reproductive rights and things, I just can't understand giving a heck about this. But obviously, if the stock did fall, again, it could be ad hoc, ergo, propter hoc. Maybe the stock fell had nothing to do with this. Maybe there, you know, some other news is going to come out. So to me, the stock falling was like the weird real world significance of something that otherwise is just cultural foam.
I note that you're right about you really can't surprise somebody with a $2,200 gift. Or at least you should not, right? Because generally a lot of us have shared bank accounts, or what's coming in and out of mine is also coming in and out of yours. If I spend $2,500 on a gift, we are now going to take a $2,500 hit in our checking account. It's like when you buy somebody a Mercedes and they go, hooray! But in the back of their mind, they're going, wait, we're out 50 grand or 75 grand. Maybe I don't want to spend 75 grand.
My wife would call me to death with that Peloton, John. I'm sure yours would too. You know, I can't imagine doing that sort of thing. I wouldn't, you know, again, sometimes the practical, after enough Christmases go by or holidays go by, I just can't see, you know, everyone. I mean, half the time I bring something to my wife, a hat or a sweater or something, I still take it back because it's the wrong color or the wrong size or the wrong, I mean, buying someone something is such a fraught activity. You reach a point where it's like, okay, let's buy each other a new disposable.
You know what also gets lost in this is it's a really good machine. Some of you are calling in to say that. The people that have them love them. I took a trip on one on my sister's just because she wanted me to try it. She loves it. And I saw the cool of it. I got to be honest with you. It's not for me. It's not for us right now. That's for sure.
Lets you plug in like to the best cycling spinning class in the world, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works. And it's not just a bicycle, but it's also you're part of the whole Peloton system, which also charges you per month or something.
I'll make a prediction that actually in the long run, they're going to come out ahead.
Of course. Yeah, this is all publicity.
that they will survive this. Elif said, you're out of time, John. Read Neil Steinberg in the Chicago Sun-Times. Nice to talk to you, Neil.
Always a pleasure, John. Anytime.
Yep. 10:07 on WGN. Good morning. This is John Williams here weekdays from 9 to noon. Every time that I open up my microphone again and start talking, I hear my voice in my headphones. You hear it in your speaker, and I hope I sound okay to you because I sound terrible to me, and I don't want to dwell on it.
A little cold?
A little bit, and not so bad. It's just kind of hanging around. Welcome to December in Chicago, I guess, right? So I'm better than I sound. I'm fine. I can do my show. It just sounds this way.
You look great.
Thank you, Steve. That's so nice of you to say. Lots of text messages. I won't dwell on this. We need to move on to other topics. I've talked already too much about the Peloton ad. But Allison texted in and said, that ad is terrible because the woman comes across as disingenuous and fake. The whole ad makes me feel uncomfortable. But others have said maybe she wanted a Peloton for Christmas, and the cost doesn't matter. If they can afford it, who cares what they give each other for Christmas? You've obviously forgotten about the Neiman Marcus Christmas catalog. I guess what, Neiman Marcus Christmas catalog had expensive stuff in there, and you dreamed a little? Somebody said it reminds me of a Lexus commercial. It's a big bow on it. It's something to aspire to. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem with the commercial to me is that towards the end of the ad, in the last few seconds, you realize what's happened. The world in which this ad exists is that she got a Peloton one year. She rides it every day. She's as beautiful as she ever was. But she feels better about herself after a year because she's been exercising like this. And the whole year long, she's been making videos, talking to her phone. And then they took the time to, I guess, edit it so that a year later, she's presenting to her husband. They're watching it on the flat screen TV there. She's presenting. It's weird. The two of them are sitting there watching her talking to them. And she's describing how she feels about exercising on her stationary cycle when she could have just as easily turned to her husband and said thanks. But anyway, they're watching her say thanks to him on the screen, and he is beaming the way you do when your kid walks onto stage in the grade school production as a frog and gets the line right. He's just so super proud. He's sitting up straight and he's leaning into the TV and he's just exuding joy at this wife who has exercised for a year. And I don't know, maybe that's a good thing for them too. But that thing is where it gets Stepford, and it's creepy. The ad doesn't play out that way, but that is the story of the ad. And so if when you watch it, you think, I don't know what's wrong here, but it feels wrong, that's what's wrong there. And then the value of the stock dropped $1.5 billion, and now it's recovering. So there's that. So it's probably not going to hurt the company in the long run. Steve, my prediction was that in the long run, Peloton will come out ahead. Because now people are talking about Peloton. And really, if you look at it, it's a swell thing.
It's become a noun for bike, you know, workout bike. No one talks about other workout bikes.
Oh, that's interesting.
They talk about Peloton.
They talk about Peloton. I was thinking that some of the pushback on this may have been the same way you see pushback about Canada Goose jackets. It's a swell jacket. It's a really expensive coat. You may want one. You may not want one because people will look at you and see that you've got a $1,000 coat on when a $500 coat would keep you just as warm. But boy, Canada Goose jackets are everywhere in Chicago. And I kind of want one, but I kind of don't want one for all of those reasons.
No can do.
You wouldn't wear one if
no,
I gave you one?
No, I don't think so.
The Daily Beast published an article last week asking the question, is that Canada Goose jacket keeping you single? People see the Canada Goose jacket and go, nope, not having that. That's a package I don't want to open. Seriously. I mean, it sends off a signal.
It shows materialism, I think.
I think, sure it does. But so does a Rolex watch, a Mercedes, a BMW, a Peloton. I mean, are we going to fault people because they've purchased something that makes them feel good, and they have the means to do it?
Okay, but what is a Canada Goose coat made out of versus a North Face one, and what's a Rolex watch made out of versus a Swatch one?
Well, a North Face coat is an expensive coat.
Yeah, but all right.
but it's like $700 less.
Right. You could tell the time with the less expensive watch. You can get to work in a less expensive car. You can stay just as warm in a less expensive coat. But the looks of each of those are better. And let's face it, people like pricey things.
See, I have a hard time with it because really it's all it is just about the label on the shoulder.
Exactly, because I don't think they look all that great. Their shoulders kind of
so someone's buying
down?
A coat, so
look, I don't know.
I think they look awesome. I think they look awesome. And a lot of times they're on awesome-looking people,
too. Well, that's the thing.
That helps.
Depends on who's got wearing one. I mean, they just look like a coat to me. Anything.
Maybe I should try one on. They're under lock and key. You go to Nordstrom or stores, not just Nordstrom. Where was I the other day? They were carrying them. And they've got that security rope through them because people, I guess, are inclined to steal them. They are that expensive and that coveted. Maybe the way people were snatching smartphones from people's hands when those first came out. There you were, standing there on a street corner unwittingly with $500 sticking out of your hand, and people, remember, were just coming up and ripping off people's smartphones. You don't hear that so much anymore. That used to happen a lot as well. I think if you can't date somebody with a Canada Goose jacket, that's your problem. That's not theirs. I said that Mary Schmeek was going to join us in this hour. She does after the 10:30 edition of WGN Radio News. Her latest book, Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now, is the second volume of a compilation of her columns. The book by that title came out a few years ago. They've updated the book, taken some columns out, put some new columns in. If you are a Chicagoan, if you want to have a book or a collection of books that tell Chicago stories, it's a history of our city for while she's been writing, and it's really good. Some of the columns, of course, you'll remember. Some maybe you missed. But when she edits down her very good stuff to her very best stuff, it's each page really terrific page turning. One of the stories she tells, I'll ask her to comment more about this when she comes in after 10:30, is about the walking man. There has been a guy in Chicago for years who walks around the loop through the Gold Coast, the Financial District, the Mag Mile. You know, he just kind of walks around the city. He has a particular look, too. Usually he's wearing a blazer with a pocket square, a nice shirt, unbuttoned, no tie, dress slacks, and leather shoes. He's always had long hair that at first was jet black. And last time I saw him, I'd been away. I moved to Minnesota, and then I came back, and I saw him again walking around town, and his hair was white-gray. And she tells the story about this guy, and I never knew his deal. Who is that guy? What is he doing? And in this case, what happened to him when he was assaulted one time on the street? So she tells the story of the walking man. You read that, and you either feel closer to Chicago or you're introduced to part of Chicago that you don't know. Her book is called Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now. And Mary will join us after 10:30. For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mateer, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. Steve, I know you saw Walking Man a lot downtown, right? You were in Chicago enough, like me. You've seen that guy. And then, put that over there. Another person who I haven't seen in a while, I hope he's alive and well, is the colorful suits guy who would spin around in front of the studios, the TV studios in town. Have you seen this guy? He would wear brightly colored suits, like the Joker, and ties and shirts and jackets and pants, matching outfits. And he would come up to people and spin around and then flash open his jacket just to display the colors he was wearing. He wasn't a flasher. He was just flashing his beautiful clothes. He'd startle people sometimes. Other people saw him coming and they'd know the show and move on. But if you'd be watching, say, Channel 5 when they were doing their late afternoon newscast sometimes, they had a showcase studio where you could see people on the street, and he'd be there waving and sometimes spinning around. I don't know what happened to him, but he was another one of those street creatures the regular Chicagoans kind of knew, the likes of which Mary Schmeek writes about. Last notes about our last conversation. Did you see the follow-up ad with the same actress for Ryan Reynolds' gin brand? Yeah, Ryan Reynolds has Aviation Gin. and the woman that was in the Peloton commercial, he hired to be in that commercial. And now, having escaped from her controlling husband, she's having some martinis with her friends. The ad's kind of funny. It's very smart in that it, you know, takes the energy from one ad, puts it in his. He didn't even have to buy commercials. He's going to have a jump in his aviation gin, I'm sure. A couple of you said, hey, could you give us the name of the starter brand, please? We were talking about Jump Starters last week. It's a great Christmas gift. You know, the kind that are the size of a paperback book you could put in your purse or glove box, and when your car dies, instead of pulling another car up to yours and getting out the jumper cables, you simply whip out this handy little gadget. It costs you $60 or $160, and you just jumpstart your car with that. Very easy, no lugging, no driving, no calling another car. I do not have one of those. People on my Christmas list are going to get one this year, including my wife. I had never thought about that before, and I do not have a good name brand for you on those, except some of you said you saw it at Menards. And then when I looked online, Consumer Report, elsewhere, I saw a bunch of different brands, a bunch of different labels for that, but I don't know what the one is. So if you've got a suggestion for us, the one you bought, the price, and it worked real well, right? All I need to do is jumpstart a car or a bus. What's the brand you bought? What's the price you paid? Because a lot of people are asking about that, and it sounds like a pretty good gift to me.
Although I hope you're getting Brenda something else besides that.
Be careful when you buy somebody Peloton. What they ask for. Yeah, I got her a Peloton and a bottle of aviation.
There you go.
I'd look at it and I'd be like, oh, thanks.
Yeah. A car starter. Mm-hmm.
As a woman, maybe. I don't know. I'm just sure many women like that. But.
Yeah, that's just something you buy her at the store if you're there. Hey, I thought you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. It's a total grandma gift.
Grandma gift?
Grandma gift.
A gift you get grandma, or grandma gives you.
Gives to the grandchildren.
Yeah.
I was worried about you.
Well, a lot of times the grandparents will call and say, what should we get the kids? And if you don't want to say a gift card... Then you this would be something like this if the kids are driving. I know plenty of parents who have a lot of anxiety when their kids are in high school age and they're driving, or they're in college and they're going to and fro. If you got them one of these, and they're on some forgotten road in the middle of the night, and the car dies or whatever, because it also, you can get the air pump that goes with it, so it pumps up the car. Somebody just texted in a picture. So a 312-981-7200. Call or text me right now. Tell me what you paid and what the brand name was of the jump starter that you got. Steve, thanks for the text. John, I always thought Walking Man looked like Sam Elliott. And then Here's a picture of Sam Elliott. Or it's Walking Man. I'm not even sure who this is.
He looks like Sam Elliott or the Marlboro Man.
A little bit. A little bit, but with a little... He had a vacant look in his eyes. I don't know that he was mentally an entirely well person, the Walking Man, but I don't know what happened to him. 847, John, people freak out about Canada Goose jackets because they're trimmed in coyote fur, which is all legally hunted and trapped. I did not know that. Not all of them have fur hoods or trim.
So wait, that's a bad thing that we're using the coyote fur?
I guess so. People freak out about Canada Goose jackets because they're trimmed out in coyote
fur. You know what the world needs?
More coyotes?
Fewer coyotes.
Yeah. I guess if I had sheep or a small dog near the woods, maybe I'd feel that way. Ray, join us. You're on WGN. Hi, Ray. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Talk to me. What's up?
Hey, those jump starters, we sell them in my shop. They're called Truck Gear by Linex. I own a Linex shop.
Ah, Truck Gear by Linex.
Correct.
What have those set me back?
I think they're 120.
Yeah. And then I said that they start your car. Do you have the one that also you can hook up to a pump or something and it will pump up your tire?
No, but there's attachments that you can use. I started an F-550 with one, a diesel.
Wow.
And it started it right up, no problem.
Okay, so I want to get the Truck Gear is the brand name, but Linex is the company. Where's your store, Ray?
It's in Palatine, Illinois, 645 South Vermont Street.
Okay, there's a free one for you, Ray. Good luck to you. Have a good Christmas.
You too. Take care now.
Yeah, I appreciate the help. Hey, Candy, you're on the air. What's going on? Hey, Candy.
Hello.
Hi, Candy. This is John. How are you?
Hi, John. Good. I have a Halo brand of the small jump starters.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of detail about it. My husband did give it to me as a gift, but I used it 3 times last summer and it worked.
Wow.
Jump starting cars. And grocery store parking lot where somebody couldn't get their car started, that type of thing. So it worked, and I'm positive he got it online, but I don't know much more than that.
Sounds like it could be a nice little side business.
What, you drive around parking lots and just say, hey, right. $5, trust me. And by the way, Candy, how did you feel about getting that as a gift?
You know, I kind of raised my eyebrow at it, like, oh, I don't know, thank you. I wasn't about the same way I felt when he gave me WeatherTech floor liners, but, you know, I love those, too.
I got to tell you, that's where my wife is. She Brenda keeps looking at me saying, we got to get some WeatherTech floor liners, and I'm thinking about Santa Claus coming down the chimney. Mary Schmeek's book, Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now, is out in hardback on Hope, Loss, and Wearing Sunscreen, winner of the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Commentary. You may have seen the first edition, similar title, and some of the columns are the same, but some of them are different, some exited, and some new ones are in the latest issue. If you like Chicago, if you like good storytelling, if you have a collection of books about this city, then this one needs to be in there. And if you don't, you should start one now. Mary is in our studio. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for that.
Is that a fair description?
Those nice words, John.
It's so true. How hard is it to, you get this all the time, right? Come up with a column as often as you have to? Is that the hardest part of your job, thinking of the idea?
I would say that is one of the hardest parts of my job. Dealing with the aftermath of columns and living in public, as you may know, is also difficult. But yeah, coming up with 3 ideas a week for 27 and a half years now. 3 ideas that I can execute responsibly and well. 3 ideas that I think might have enough appeal to enough people. There are weeks when that is really hard and weeks when it's not so hard.
Yeah. But the craft itself of then writing, once you have the germ of the idea and you like it, then the words come.
I wish it were that easy. No, I mean, every single one is a challenge in a new way. It never gets easy. I think
really?
People think that it does. I mean, maybe it's easier now in ways that I don't recognize than it was in the beginning. It's easier to the extent that I know I can do it.
It reads easily. It doesn't look labored at all.
Yeah.
And yet you labor over it.
Easy is difficult.
Yeah, yeah, maybe so. You also said the aftermath. Is that a new phenomenon, or what are you talking about there?
Well, you know, especially the world we live in now of social media, email. It's like everything you write gets a huge response. And that's very gratifying when it's gratifying. It's also really exhausting when it's exhausting. Because everybody wants to pick apart everything you do. And again, you know, this is just part of the job. I'm not really complaining. I'm just describing.
Sure.
And it is extremely gratifying to have people read what I write or, you know, in your case, listen. I mean, it's one of the greatest gifts we can ever get, that people would pay any attention to what we have to say. But it does come with a lot of, I think, demand that people don't recognize.
When I find myself judging or passing judgment on somebody's bumper sticker, and I think, why would somebody put that on the back of their car? And then I think, John, you are a human bumper sticker.
Exactly.
You are nothing but driving down people's roads, spewing opinions, some of which you wish you could scrape off the back of your bumper at the end of the day. So give these people a break.
Or some of which you wish you had articulated better, more clearly, whatever.
Most bumper stickers are better than me, that's for sure. But Mary, you don't write about politics that often. You don't write about the president that often. You do some scathing and funny poems about Donald Trump once in a while. But you've stayed out of that arena. I thought somebody like you would be a little more insulated from some of the quick criticisms that the rest of us are subjected to.
Oh, no. I mean, so here's my philosophy about writing about politics. The world is so much bigger than politics. Now, you could argue that everything is politics, but let's not have that argument right now. I have always approached my column with the belief that most of us, most of the time, until fairly recently, are thinking about things besides politics. But even that, you know, you write about someone you love dying. You write about mental illness. You write about some socks you like. This happened to me just yesterday.
Socks?
Yes.
Are we going to get a socks column soon?
Oh, well, I mentioned my socks fetish in my column, and I've heard from several people who just want to argue with me about, you know, socks.
Wait,
somebody wants to argue about everything. So if you write about mental illness, someone you love who has a mental illness, many people will write to connect with you on that, share their own experience. But other people will take issue with a word that you use. So it's just complicated.
And that's a topic that you've written about. You've written about your very strange family. You wrote about your sister. You and I were talking about this a little bit off the air. It was one of the columns that was that in the first edition, or is that?
Yeah, it's in the first
edition. It's in the first edition as well. Tell me a little bit about your sister.
My sister is maybe the most amazing person I know, but I think it's taken me a long time to fully understand that and to fully appreciate her. She is the eighth of eight children. She was born with some physical problems, but mostly just mental challenges, which were never properly diagnosed. She was born in the 1960s, where, you know, even she herself will say to me sometimes, she goes, you know, Mary, they just didn't have very good psychiatry back then, did they? And I go, no, Gina, they didn't. You know, she probably today would be diagnosed as somewhere on the autism spectrum. But she has other things going on. She's had many diagnoses. I don't want to go into them here, but she is so strong. I mean, I don't want to romanticize it, but she is so deep, and it really took me, I think, until the last 10 years of my life to fully comprehend the life that she is living inside the body, inside the mind, that she was granted, and that really, she is me.
She is you.
She is me.
What do you mean by that?
She's so much like me. It's just that she's got a slightly different wiring. And the older I get, the older she gets, the more I understand that.
Yeah, it's funny how as we get older, our siblings get older, we start to see some of those connections. And when we like them or don't, but there they are, right?
Right.
You said that about your parents, too, or your father, that the older you get, the more we may resemble our parents. When your mother passed away, your sister lived with your mom.
Right.
And you were worried that when your mom passed away, how would your sister get along? And lo and behold, she rather flourished, didn't she? She became a much more responsible or competent person when suddenly she had to, right?
Yeah, and again, I don't want to simplify that because she still has a complicated life, but she'd always lived with our mother and was extremely dependent on our mother. And me and my siblings just really thought she would fall apart, and we didn't know what to do. And instead of falling apart, she just mustered something.
Yeah.
Don't want to romanticize
it. I'm not asking you to.
Don't want to simplify it. But she has managed to live independently in the almost 10 years since our mother died, and no one ever thought that would be possible.
Well, I'm related to it, and I think anybody who's got family members whose independence you're not sure about would read this and relate to it in very personal ways. You wrote also, so some of your columns are like that, very personal, and maybe the rest of us can connect on some level. And then at other times you write Chicago stories, The Boy and the Bullet. His name was
Tavon Tanner.
Tavon Tanner. And did that appear originally as a series of columns, or
it was just one long piece? I mean, I think of it more as a story. It was a very long 6,000 or so word story that I wrote about Tavon, who was shot on his porch in the summer of 2016, and it looked for a while like he might die. And it was in a summer when a lot of kids were getting shot.
Yeah.
And so I set out to figure out, you know, what's a story we can tell that makes this fact of Chicago life feel real, feel important, and not just, you know, oh, another kid shot, which is the way I think a lot of people process it. And his mother, Melanie, and he were just remarkably open. And Jason Wamsgans took these remarkable photos that won the Pulitzer for photography. So that's an example of a story that I have gotten to tell.
You told the story we mentioned before you came in of the walking man in Chicago. You have a really beautiful piece about Roger Ebert. Now, let's tell some more Chicago stories with Mary Schmeek after this. Mary Schmeek's in our studio. Even the terrible things seem beautiful to me now is her latest book. It's a compilation of some of her award-winning columns. Why the title, Mary? It's been told before, but tell us what the title means.
My mother, when she was in, I think, the last year of her life, I was visiting her in Oregon, and I went out, and she was looking at the roses, and my mother never cried, despite her very difficult life, and she was crying just a little bit. I was so startled by it, and she said something like, I think you have to be old to understand your life. And then she said, even the terrible things seem beautiful to me now. And I remember at the time thinking, well, Mama, I'm writing that down.
Whatever this moment is, I just got a column out of that.
And then
Shame on you.
I joked for several years, you know. I said, you know, someday I'm gonna write a book with that title, never thinking that I really would. And then we were looking for a title for my column collection. And I threw it out there thinking, you know, people would roll their eyes. And Colin McMahon, who was overseeing this project at the Tribune, said, I like it.
Hmm.
So there you have it.
What did she mean by that?
Even the terrible things seem beautiful to me. I think it's pretty obvious, right? You know, you go through your life and every day, oh my God, this is so hard. I'm so afflicted. Things are going to be terrible. The world is exploding. My life is exploding, blah, 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 blah. My mother had many, many moments when she could have fallen victim to that. But it's like at the end, you just go, oh, that was life. That was my life.
I wonder if that's something that, okay, I got it, and I believe that about a person late in life. I wonder, as a younger person, can I use that? Can I value that? Can I actually see through the crappy times and know that someday I'm going to look back on this and have a better perspective, you know? Hopefully.
I think sometimes you can, and I think that is part of the value of words. That is part of the value of our well-articulated ideas, that when you hear the words, you carry those words, you know, like little talismans, stones in your pocket, and you just, you know, you reach for them and you rub them and you go, okay, someday this terrible thing will look beautiful to me, even if it's really hard to convince yourself.
Right. The title of her book is Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now. Good that Mary's ear heard that from her mother's lips and put it in this perspective. She also wrote Friday, April 5th, 2013, about Roger Ebert's passing in a column entitled Roger Ebert's Lesson in Dying. I don't have time to read all of it to you here, but I just wanted to share a couple of sentences from it. Roger Ebert was a hot trend on Google's top 10 trends earlier this week. You started the column. And you later in the column said, Ebert deserves to be remembered for something more, dying with grace. Some people die quickly, others a little at a time. Ebert faded slowly, dramatically, with the philosophical flourish. In the past few years, doctors had cut out his thyroid, then part of his salivary glands, then a piece of his jaw. He could no longer eat, drink, or talk. A different person might have shrunk into despair. Ebert navigated his way out of the depths through writing, along with a connection to young people, a reliance on new technology, and a humility that verged on bravado. In a 2010 piece in Esquire, read it if you haven't, he allowed his ruined face to be photographed in close-up. His deformed jaw and permanently open mouth filled with a glossy filled a full glossy page. His eyes still shone. When I am writing, my problems become invisible, and I am the same person I always was, he said in that piece. All is well. I am as I should be. A while after that, he engaged in a political battle via Twitter with a conservative who gleefully mocked his cancer and his disfigurement. Ebert tweeted back, "You want ugly? For that you have to look at a mind, not a face." Oh, that's just so well told, and what a great wit and brain and writer he was, wasn't he, Roger?
You know,
Ebert.
One of the great things about writing in Chicago, which I realize more and more all the time, is writing in this constellation of people who have written in Chicago or who have been on the radio, you know, who have been granted this great grace and opportunity of being a public voice. And there are just so many of them. And to be part of the constellation is like, I don't think it hit me, honestly, until relatively recently that I went, oh, I've been able to do that for 27 years.
Maybe that's why people are texting in and saying things like, John, please tell Mary thanks for the warm column about the passing of Larry Dunphy. I live near the family. He was a wonderful man. Thanks for the radio program and for the Tribune newspaper. You must get that all of the time,
well,
too.
Thank that listener, reader for reading. Means a lot to me.
You wrote about Walking Man. We were kind of laughing about him or recollecting some of our intersections with Walking Man. Is he still alive, do you know?
I passed him, and his name is Joe, which we didn't know until he was attacked. I saw him a month or two ago.
Yeah, no kidding. And he still walks around the city.
Yeah, slower than he used to.
Hair is whiter than it once was. Does he still have the full mustache, the healthy mustache?
I think so.
Did you see it?
I don't remember.
You tell about how he got mugged, and I don't remember that episode in his life, but I sure think of him as just this sort of solitary figure wandering the streets, and I wonder, how does he pay his bills? Where does he live? What does his family say about him? You track down, a sister-in-law? Was that who you talked to?
I think that's who it was.
Yeah, who just recollected a little bit about his story. It's in this book. You write about the optimism in Barack Obama's voice. Not just his tenor, but literally the words that he would choose. Why did you write about that?
Well, the phrase I use for it is the discipline of optimism, because I think it's really easy to mock optimism, to mock optimists, to equate optimism with naivete. And Barack Obama incarnates what I think of as the discipline of optimism. It's like your default is not cynicism. It's not that there aren't times to be cynical. And I think Barack Obama just over and over and over in his public life, which I think is a relatively true reflection of his private self, he encouraged us to think optimistically, to not go to the ugly place first. And that is a discipline. That is something that you resolve you will do. Not go to the ugly place first. Not go to the cynical place first.
Even though that would be your gut reaction. Even though that would be an honest reaction. You get angry. You write, for instance, I mean, this is the president who had to talk to us after Sandy Hook and after 9 black parishioners were gunned down by an angry white man in a Charleston, South Carolina church. You write about the 49 people dead in a gay club in Orlando and all of the times that Barack Obama had to talk to us in moments like that. You wrote, optimism isn't quite the same as hope, no matter what the thesaurus says. To my ear, hope is a fluffier thing, that pretty flower that springs spontaneously from the dirt, no gardening skills required. Optimism, on the other hand, is hard. It can take work. It demands focus in the face of contradiction. It's a habit of mind, and like all habits, it can be difficult to cultivate and easy to lose. But maybe especially in this day and age, I'm speaking now, not Mary Schmeek, it would be good for us to sort of find that tool in the box and try and use it a little more.
Yeah, and it is just a tool in the box. It's not the same as saying, oh, everything's great, everybody can relax, no worries. It's not that. It's just not going to the dark, ugly place first. all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And people say, well, you got to be realistic, or you use the word naive if you don't have those feelings or see that side of the story or the world. But I think you can, and then say, but I'm going to be optimistic. But that was all those speeches Barack Obama gave. He said, this is terrible, this sucks, it's awful what happened. But then he had an optimistic, hopeful tone about it at the end. By the way, Songs of Good Cheer, is that sold out, Mary Schmeek?
Songs of Good Cheer is sold out. But what I always say about sold out is that you never know. There are always some tickets that turn up at the last minute. Always, always, always. So if anybody really wants to go, call the Old Town School the day of.
The Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago hosts their singers, their staff, and Mary Schmeek and Eric Zorn of the Tribune, the columnists, who are talented musicians and singers. And all of these people go on stage, and then we all sit in the audience. We buy tickets. The proceeds go to charity, I believe. And
a good portion of them.
And we sing Christmas songs. And some of them are familiar, and some of them are not at all. It is the most fun, perfectly cheery experience you will ever have.
And you've come many times, John, for which we thank you.
I will be there again this year. Songs of Good Cheer. Yeah, try and get tickets. And if you can't this year, do it next. Also pick up Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now, Mary Schmeek's latest collection. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, John.
John Williams, Justin Kaufman has been doing a bracket. We used to do brackets for all kinds of things. Candy bars at Halloween, whatever. He's doing brackets of the greatest Chicago movie of all time. They're battling it out there in the Sweet 16. He gets advocates for the various movies to take the position that this movie should win in this round. Michael Phillips will be one of his guests tonight talking about great Chicago films. That's on Extension 720. Justin's going to pop in with us in about 10 minutes and tell us where the brackets are of the best Chicago movies ever. I filled out the brackets, and it's funny because what's the quintessential Chicago movie? Is it Blues Brothers? Is it Christmas Vacation? Is it Home Alone? And there's so many of them. You go, you know that one. Oh, no, that one. I guess you will all decide. I was watching Christmas Vacation last night and taking notes for a project that I came up with that will require more work than I want to do. So I mentioned it to Lou Manfredini. I said, Lou, I've got a great idea for your show. You and your producer should do this. And he said, that is a great idea, and you and your producer should do this. So here's what I did. I watched Home Alone again last night. And in each scene where damage is done to Clark Griswold's home, I paused the movie and made a note of what happened and what the relative expense of that would be or what the repair would be. And then I thought at the end, it would be perfect for Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, on the 12 days of, like the 12 days of Christmas, it would be the 12 repairs of Christmas. Lou would walk you through the 12 major disasters that happened in Clark Griswold's home and what the cost would be to fix them up. And in the process, he would tell you how to fix windows, how to repair carpeting, how to fix a hole in the ceiling, how to repair the stairwell, handyman sort of things.
That is a great idea.
It really is.
And he jumped on it?
He jumped on my doing it. He said, absolutely, that's so much fun. You should do that. So I have. I mean, at least I'm halfway through now. So I have my annotated bibliography of damage to the Griswold home, which, by the way, isn't as bad as you would think. A lot of the, because I'm not going to replace the dining room set or the bureau, stuff in the house that's damaged and broken and destroyed, I'm not fixing. I'm just repairing the structure itself. So, for instance, at the end, when the police all crash through the windows, we're going to need 3 new windows. When the dog jumps through the door in the kitchen, the interior door, from the kitchen to the dining room, chasing the squirrel, we're going to need a new door. So there's about 7 or 8 scenes like that. But I got to tell you, we all love Christmas Vacation, but when I watch it as a homeowner, we all see things through our own filters, and one of mine is as a homeowner. And I think, God, poor Clark, I don't know how he's able to sit down and relax, because this week with his family is going to cost him $30,000, $40,000, I'm thinking. He's got to repair the ceiling in the bedroom when he crashed through in the attic. He's got to get new windows where the cops came through. When he opened the Christmas tree, whoosh, and the branches splayed out. They crashed through two windows. That'd be the sort of thing that would be so upsetting to me for months. And moments later, they're sitting there enjoying the tree. I don't have that muscle. I can't flex it that way. Then some I'm not so sure. For instance, when his uncle throws the match into the sewer gas and blows up the front yard at the end of the movie, I don't know if a lot of damage to the property was done there. Maybe some light landscaping. I'm not going to worry about that. But anyway, I've done my homework. Now it's going to be up to our Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, to tell us what the repairs and costs would be. And then we'll package it all up in a nice little Christmas bow and present that on this show or Lou's sometime in the near future. All of that because Justin Kaufman is doing his 16 now greatest movies of Chicago. And I would say Christmas Vacation should be on that list. There's a couple of other texts we were going to pass along. John, what was the title of Mary Schmeek's book again? It is Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me. Now it's in bookstores everywhere. And a lot of you are texting in about the jump starters for your cars that everybody seems to have but me. A lot of you are saying the ones they sell on QVC are very good. Hi, John and Elif. This is the TSV today on QVC, Merry Christmas, Lori. And it's the Halo Bolt AC-DC wireless phone charger and car jump starter with car charger. So QVC. John, Halo is the best, plus it charges phones and other stuff. QVC has great prices. And from 773, I had a jump starter. It was like the size of a small battery again, and I got it at O'Reilly's. I had it in my trunk. It cost me about $160. It saved me so many times. And as a single woman, I actually was enjoying the polar vortex, sitting in the Jewel, warming up my car. I actually went around to three cars and started their cars for them. They couldn't believe I took this thing out of my trunk. It was so small. I got three people back on the road. It's a lifesaver after 2 years of not using it, not really paying attention what was in my trunk. I didn't realize that somebody had stolen it, and a car wash, when they would clean out and vacuum my trunk, obviously they took the jump starter. I know it was them. It was only time somebody else would steal it. I have never thought about that, but there's another, I guess, rave review for that technology if you don't have it yet. We have not done our Monday Mega Morning Quiz. We will after the 11:30 WGN Radio News. Every Monday, Mega sponsors a morning Chicago quiz. This one is about the Chicago Bears. Steve, I'll throw a couple at you. Mary, are you any good at Chicago Bears trivia? I won't tell you if you're right or wrong. I won't tell you if you're right or wrong. I'll just give you a sample of some of the questions.
Are we allowed to guess?
Yeah, all time, because I'm not going to tell you if you're right or wrong. Oh. All-time leading scorer for the Bears.
Well, it used to be Kevin Butler.
Oh.
But I think he's been passed up.
The player with the most points who is not a kicker in Bears history is whom?
Walter?
He threw the most passing attempts, the most completions, the most touchdowns, and threw for the most yards. The most prolific passing quarterback of all time for the Bears is...
Sid Luckman?
I'll give you a guess. You have two choices. A, Sid Luckman. Or B, Jay Cutler.
Yeah, it's Jay Cutler.
It's Sid Luckman or Jay Cutler.
Oh, I think it is Jay Cutler.
Number four. No Chicago Bear went to more Pro Bowls than he did. Who is it?
As a player or a fan?
Which Bears player has the most tackles of all time? Is it Brian Urlacher or Mike Singletary? So we'll do our Chicago Bears quiz, not just the questions, but the answers will come your way after the 10:30 edition of the news. Justin Kaufman previews his show tonight, the greatest Chicago movies ever. We're trying to get to $35,000 this year. We're at about $2,500. So yeah, that makes me nervous. Not just because my ego needs the stroke, but because I want to help the Salvation Army do the most good. I know you do, too. It's as easy as going to WGNradio.com. Click on the John Williams page and make your donation there, please. We have on our website, Justin Kaufman's in our studio now.
I think you'll get the I think you make your goal.
I hope so. I'm sure we will. Do we have your brackets up?
Yeah. The polls are up on WGNradio.com. You can find them on our Facebook page and other places. But they're all the polls of our Sweet 16 of our Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match is up.
So you're down to 16.
Yeah. We started. So the whole concept of this just came from the fact that we were arguing about movies and Chicago movies. And we started to talk about it. And we said, what if we did it like a bracket, like an NCAA tournament? We took 64 of the best Chicago movies and whittled them down to the final four and the final two. And so we did that, and we put it in bracket form, and I gave about 100 of the brackets, the 64, to staff, WGN staff. You filled out one. Ella filled one out. And then I kind of took the consensus from that, the numbers, and they borne out the Sweet 16. And so we start with the Sweet 16, so because if we did all
right,
of the matchups,
we'd
be there till 2022. So right now, yeah, there are 16 that you can vote for.
All right, give me the matchups, and I'll blurt out my...
Okay, so tonight, we've already done two. We did it last week. We did Blues Brothers versus Uncle Buck. Blues Brothers, of course, the number one seed. Uncle Buck, the John Hughes film with John Candy. Which one do you like?
Blues Brothers has
to win. Did win. It won big. And it's unfortunate because I think a lot of people wanted Uncle Buck to go further than the Sweet 16. But
well,
I got a bad matchup.
So look at the draw. You know, you got to then have a better conference record if you don't like your draw.
You know how many people are threatening me over bubble movies? Movies that didn't make the tournament that I, you know, either slipped and didn't make it or decided that it wasn't necessarily a Chicago movie.
Widows is not in this thing.
Widows is one that people get mad about. They get mad about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which
wow.
We decided was not a Chicago movie because it only ends in Chicago. But people were very upset
That's
about
funny.
That.
Widows, total Chicago movie. Yeah. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I don't think
Widows
about it.
Widows was an overstatement, well, just an overstatement.
Wait a minute, what about Home Alone then?
Home Alone, we decided on Home Alone because when you do watch Home Alone, which of course is on 6,000 times right now, it is the beginning of it. It's all Chicago. They're going to O'Hare. They're getting picked. Everything about it is very Chicago.
They go to Braidwood in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Do they really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Shot right. Part of it at, yeah. At Braidwood.
We could argue. We could spend the whole time arguing this. Because that will. There's also Midnight Run, which was the great De Niro, Grodin, and there was a Chicago scene. They come to Chicago, want to either end up or start in Chicago.
Those movies are very similar, and yeah. Of the two, Midnight Run to me is the better.
Yeah, and that's the question here, is not necessarily the best movie. And because I, like for instance, in the Sweet 16, and we'll get to Wayne's World is in the Sweet 16. I don't necessarily consider that to be a Chicago movie, although it is. I mean, it has the great driving around scene, and it really kind of goes out of its way to show some of the more really true blue Chicago iconic spots, things like that. But that movie beats out Running Scared. Another movie in the first 64 was My Bodyguard. Those are Chicago movies, but when they go up against these movies that are iconic beyond Chicago, they lose.
Well, Christmas Vacation was Christmas pretty Vacation. Much not filmed in Chicago.
So The Fugitive gets Christmas Vacation in the Sweet 16. I saw The Fugitive was on Showtime this weekend. It was in a hotel room. I was like, I almost skipped my wife's Christmas party to watch it. I watched the first 30 minutes of it.
Which wins for you?
The Fugitive. But because that's a Chicago. I mean, that is authentic Chicago. When you go into it, even everything about it is very Chicago. He comes
Christmas
back to Chicago.
Christmas Vacation's going to win.
Christmas Vacation is not shot here, but everyone knows that the Griswolds live in Chicago. They see the shot where they go down Michigan Avenue, or
Marshall Field, yeah.
So there is this Chicago vibe, this Christmas Chicago Michigan Avenue vibe, and of course the Griswolds are known to be a Chicago family. So there is something, and that's really what you have to determine. And when you mentioned I brought advocates in studio, so the idea is they have to argue these points. They have to say, you know, I'm for The Fugitive, I'm also against Christmas Vacation, because Christmas Vacation, although it is set in Chicago, it's not shot here. Everyone knows when at the beginning of that movie, when they go get the Christmas tree, there are mountains in the background. It was shot in Colorado.
Yeah.
The rest of it was on a Warner Brothers lot in L.A. There's not even any moment in which Chevy Chase or John Hughes or any of the people who were involved in that film were actually shooting in Chicago. There's an exterior. There are a couple exteriors, like they show Marshall Fields, the outside, but that's about it. But people like that movie, and they do think it's Chicago. So that's a tough one.
God, we were watching Christmas Vacation the other day, and somebody, maybe it was Brenda, said, commented on the movies in the mountains in the background.
Yeah.
When they go, she goes, that's nowhere near Chicago.
It's nowhere. They shot it in Colorado. Another great one. This is the one that really is going to be my favorite. Tonight is an awesome one. It's The Untouchables versus Home Alone. That's you go one way or the other, and it might be generational, and it might break down in different demographics as opposed to
what
true
kind of
blue
movie
Chicago.
I like, yeah.
Yeah. But this is the one that you can do a lot of arguments. I'm looking forward to it. The Dark Knight, the Batman film, of course, Heath Ledger, versus About Last Night, which is the Jim Belushi, Demi Moore, Rob Lowe film that took place, based on sexual perversity in Chicago, the David Mamet play. It is true. That is a Chicago movie.
Yeah.
Everything about it.
Softball scenes, bars, right. Stuff like that.
Now, The Dark Knight is not set in Chicago. It is set in Gotham City. So it has a little bit of an asterisk. People love that movie, and of course, anyone who was living here in the last 10 years remembers all the great scenery from it and everything, but it's Gotham City.
Remember, Kelly's is still there, isn't it, under the Albert Belden? Not Belden, but Webster. Yeah, that used to be a haunt of mine was in that movie.
That's what I mean. It's a hard one because I would say Dark Knight's better than About Last Night as a movie.
Oh, God, yes.
But if you're going for the true blue Chicago experience, About Last Night is Chicago and Dark Knight is Gotham City.
Okay, well, if I'm doing your brackets, and I don't remember how I scored this, I probably said Dark Knight because some iconic Chicago scenery and a better movie. But if you said, give me a Chicago movie, About Last Night should advance, even though
it's written by Tim Kazurinsky, and it's
I don't like that movie.
It's got a lot of great Chicago shots, and there's some.
Can I just say one more in defense of that movie? I lived that movie. That movie came out.
You were the Jim Belushi character.
It was, yeah. No, actually, I was the woman.
You're Demi.
Demi Moore.
Demi.
No, but I was living in that neighborhood at the time that movie came out, and just was at the moment. It was great.
Okay, I got a couple more for you.
Before you do, I want to just throw a couple of titles at you. People are asking if they made your cut. Yeah.
They probably did.
Ordinary People?
Yes, and that was a very close one. That lost to About Last Night by one vote to get to the Sweet
16. Is Risky Business in there?
Risky Business is up against Hoop Dreams in the Sweet 16.
Okay, so give us your Sweet 16.
Okay, so it's Untouchables, Home Alone, Wayne's World versus High Fidelity.
High Fidelity.
That's the John Cusack, Jack Black song, or movie. Blues Brothers versus Uncle Buck. We did that one. Dreams versus Risky Business. That's a tough one.
But those are equally Chicago.
Nick DiGilio, he's going to say Risky Business. He's big into Risky Business.
Yeah.
That's his
Keep go-to. Going.
The Fugitive, Christmas Vacation, Dark Knight, About Last Night, Ferris Bueller, Cooley High, and Backdraft versus Adventures in Babysitting.
Okay.
Those are the Sweet 16.
Well, I would like to see Backdraft and Adventures in Babysitting pair off against some of those lesser or greater movies to advance.
And Adventures in Babysitting moved on last Thursday. So Adventures in Babysitting is in the Elite Eight.
So then Michael Phillips is going to come on and advocate tonight for the Untouchables. And
Kristen Toomey, who's a great Chicago comedian, is going to do Home Alone. Right. And then Rich Roper is doing Ferris Bueller. Rose doing Cooley High. Nick is doing Risky Business. Peter Sagal's involved. Eve Ewing. There's a lot of great people that are coming in, great Chicagoans that are coming in to advocate for these 16 films.
Hey, Randy, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Maybe add two more to the list. U.S. Marshals, which was a spinoff of The Fugitive.
Did not make the 64 because of that.
What was the other one you liked, Randy?
With Sandra Bullock, While You Were Sleeping.
Yep. Yeah. And that movie came really, really close to beating Risky Business, and it was very close.
CTA,
LaGrange. But at the end of the day, that movie just, I think a lot of people were like, that's just not that great of a movie.
Good options, Randy. Yeah. They were part of the 64 team field. Yeah. They didn't make the Sweet 16. What time are you doing this?
9 o'clock tonight, and we'll do it all week this week and part of next, and then we'll have the Elite Eight after Christmas.
Okay. Keep it up. That's a lot of fun. Yeah. Justin Kaufman on Extension 720. Did I say Clark Griswold was in Home Alone? Shame on me. By the way, 815 texted in and said, in Christmas Vacation, John, those mountains in the background, that's Mount Prospect. I do believe Mount Prospect is so named because it is the highest point in the metropolitan area.
How about Mount Trashmore? Wasn't there Mount Trashmore here? Yeah.
the garbage dump Mount Trashmore?
Right. Yeah.
All right, it's time to do our Mega Monday Morning Quiz. Here's how it works. You call 312-981-7200. Steve will be a lifeline for you. Mary, are you going to be a lifeline as well? Mary gives us a thumbs up. So here's how it works. I've got 10 questions about Chicago. This week, we're focusing on the still potentially playoff-bound Chicago Bears. 10 questions for you. The number is 312-981-7200. Call right now. Ellif will randomly pick one of the phone callers.
Can I give you one more Bears question? Actually, this is a Bears answer.
Okay.
Matt Nagy says Roquan Smith is out for the season.
Oh. That's not good news.
Yeah, they just crossed.
Both for his family and for
our family.
It's funny because they'll say the guy broke his leg or something, and people go, oh, darn, now we probably won't win. I'm going, wait, a man just broke his leg. He's in pain. It's devastating to his family. We should think about it that way. but we don't right away. The Bears are still, though, in the playoff hunt. So, anyway, 312-981-7200. So we have our Bears Monday mega quiz. Mary just strolled into the studio. Are you going to be the lifeline from here, Mary?
Oh, boy. I'm a little nervous about this. I've never played this game.
Oh, well, it's real simple. You are a lifeline. Hold on a second, Elif. I'm going to...
And this is all about the Bears, huh?
Yeah, but I don't think the questions are that hard.
Okay.
Do we have a caller, a listener, a player, as it were? Hey, Paul, you're on WGN Radio. Paul, how are you today?
Good, John.
All right, you know how this works, right?
Sure.
Okay. Cue the music. Question number one. Who's the all-time Bears leading scorer? Who is the all-time Bears leading scorer? Is it A, Robbie Gould, or B, Kevin Butler? If you're not sure of your answer, you can reach out to Steve Bertrand, who covered the Bears for years. Dave Anna just strolled into the house. Oh, my God, this is cheating.
Oh, this isn't fair.
You can get an assist from Dave Ennett or Mary Vandeville.
Oh, I think I'll just go home
Steve Bertrand.
See ya.
Holy cow.
All right. Dave's here. Hey, Dave.
Yes.
Robbie Gould or
Kevin
Butthead?
Butler.
Robbie Gould.
Robbie Gould is correct. This is cheating. Number two.
That's cheating,
John. Did you
notice
how the listener just perked up all of a sudden?
I know.
Like Dave strolled in.
He's so glad he got
wasn't that excited before,
okay,
right?
I'm not going to say a word.
Oh,
it's all yours,
no,
Mary.
No, that's okay. No.
This guy's now
just here to help.
He's gift wrapping his mega hoodie now because he knows he's going to win. The player with the most points who is not a kicker in Bears history is Gale Sayers or Walter Payton? Paul, what do you think?
I was just so I don't have to lean. I mean, I'm going to play for. I was going to say Walter Payton.
Walter Payton is correct.
Correct.
Yeah, he played longer too, right?
Correct.
Yes.
He threw the most passing attempts, the most completions, the most touchdowns, and for the most yards in Bear history. He is Sid Luckman or Jay Cutler. Paul, what do you think?
Jay Cutler.
Jay Cutler is
correct.
Mary, would you have got that one right?
Oh, I would have said him for sure.
Bertrand's first guess was Sid Luckman.
Well,
I thought that
here's
was pretty
the
impressive.
Thing: you have to remember the game changed,
right? The
and
formation.
Sid Luckman's era. You know,
they were
not throwing the ball up and down the field.
Why not?
Because it wasn't the game. The game was they ran.
They didn't know how to throw back then.
Well, but yeah, why wouldn't they?
Never forget the way you thrilled the nation with your T formation.
Yeah, but think about that. It's an interesting point. The ball wasn't that different, and arms have always been arms.
Right. I'm
and
like,
it was
why?
Always in the rules you could do it. Why didn't somebody go, hey, if I run over there, they won't be looking. Throw me the ball.
Yeah. And then
how hard is that?
We don't have to block as much.
I know, and run into a bunch of guys. Number four.
They were too concussed. They
this bear went to more Pro Bowls than anyone else. 10. Who went to more Pro Bowls than anybody else? And I'll make this a...
Is this a multiple choice?
Well, let's just see how smart the room is. Bertrand, you want to take a guess at this?
I'm going to say that's Urlacher.
How about you, Mary?
Did you say the most blacker? What did you say?
I said most Pro Bowls. This
most Pro
bear.
Bowls. Singletary?
How about you, Dave Anna? What's your guess?
There are about five or six guys on the 85 team I think you could put in there. Walter Payton went to a lot of Pro Bowls.
Paul, what's your guess going to be?
Well, I was going to say Walter Payton.
The correct answer is Mike Singletary.
Okay.
What?
Look at Mary.
Look at me.
See, Mary, you were all upset when I came in.
Well, he was always like the quiet wonder. So
he got 10.
Never 10.
Nice answer.
Which Bears player has the most tackles of all time? Urlacher or Singletary?
Oh, I was going to say Urlacher.
Correct answer is Singletary.
Oh no.
The Bears
I would have said Urlacher.
Were
Me too.
Founded. The Bears were founded. The original team was A, from New York, or B, Decatur, Illinois.
Come on.
Come on, John. of question is that?
The Bears are actually originally from New York or Decatur.
Well, George Halas played for the New York Yankees. He played right field for the New York Yankees.
The New York Staleys?
But he was from Decatur. No, he wasn't.
What's your guess going to be here, Paul? All of this nonsense not helping you at all.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that hey, Steve Bertrand, just because, you know, it's a quiet news day.
Is this a sympathy guess? It's Decatur.
You want to go with Decatur?
Yeah, Decatur.
Decatur is correct. You all knew that. The Bears game of December 31st, 1988, the Fog Bowl, is notable because a thick fog rolled in off the lake. The game was also notable because, A, it was halted and replayed the next day, or B, it pitted Mike Ditka against his former defensive coordinator, Buddy Ryan. What was significant about that game, Paul, besides the weather?
Didn't they call it?
No, Paul.
No.
No, Paul.
No. Hold on. Wait 1 second. Excuse me, sir. Okay. No, it's because Ditka was up against his former defense. That's exactly what it was.
I was working that game, and the fog was so bad at one point I was producing, because Dave used to produce, and I followed Dave. They were going to send me on the sideline to call. There's before there were sideline reporters.
Oh, really? To do play-by-play.
To explain what was going on, which would have been the biggest disaster in my professional career.
The announcers were Terry Bradshaw and Vern Lundquist, and I was watching them watch the game on a video clip last night. And they, looking out into the stadium, could not see the field because they were up too high.
Another secret about that day is the news anchor, I won't name him, recorded the halftime newscast late in the morning and then went home for the day.
Oh, without mentioning.
And the fog was not in the
newscast. Wasn't a story.
And it was right at halftime when it just started rolling in.
Did he have a job the next day?
Yeah, he did.
I was there that day. It was so weird the way it just sort of appeared.
Yeah, it did.
Rolled in off the lake.
Rolled
it was a meteorological phenomenon.
And then it was
phenomenon.
Like you, you literally couldn't see from the press box at Soldier Field to the field.
Have they ever called a game?
Well, I was at the college football all-star game at Soldier Field in mid-70s. It was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were the Super Bowl champs, against the college all-stars. And they got hit by thunderstorms and tornadoes. Early in the third quarter, and they ended it. And they never played that game again.
There was a preseason game, too, I think, right against San Diego, maybe. The Bears, that they ended because of a thunderstorm.
Here's one more. I got actually two more for you. Where have the Bears... The correct answer is, Ditka and Buddy Ryan. Where have the Bears played their most games? Where have the Bears played the most games? Soldier Field or Wrigley Field?
Soldier Field,
of course.
No,
the correct answer is
Wrigley Field.
Wrigley Field. Who
it's
knew?
A trick question.
Until 1970.
It's not a trick question. They played their whole existence at Wrigley Field up until
1970.
Okay, 1970 is not...
That was 50 years ago.
Well, 49. That's a long time ago, Dave.
Now I guess it's longer.
I can't believe that as recently as 1970, Wrigley
Field... Are you serious?
Gale Sayers' career was played... Wrigley Field.
Yep.
Who portrayed Bears halfback Brian Piccolo in the 1971 film Brian's Song?
Oh, I know this one.
Mary, go.
I can just say his
name? Yes, you may.
James Caan.
Do you think it's James Caan?
It's James Caan.
It's James Caan. And finally, how many championships have the Bears won? A1 or B9?
To find championships.
Well played, sir. Super Bowls won championships.
Well, NFL championships.
NFL championships.
They've only won one Super Bowl. We know that.
All right, I've lost my enthusiasm for this game.
Sorry.
I'm turning the music down. This is not how it's supposed to work.
Why?
Well, because in theory, Mary's a lifeline one time, Bertrand's a lifeline one time, and Dave Ennett would be a lifeline one time.
Oh, so I shouldn't have gotten involved.
But you asked.
And that was in 1986.
Look at that. Well done. You're still going to get the Mega Pros Morning Quiz hoodie. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. It's sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done. I'm glad you called. Thanks for joining us, Paul. We mentioned earlier that my Salvation Army virtual kettle is up to about $2,500, but we have a much more ambitious goal than that. We're going to do a little radiothon for the Salvation Army next week, but maybe it's the week after. December the 18th, I think it is. So next week, boy, the holidays are fast approaching. Well, they're here. Christmas is right around the corner. But if you can't listen that day, you can right now go to WGNradio.com, click on the John Williams page, and there you'll find me ringing a bell, and right there you can make your online donation. Some of you have given us $5. Somebody gave us $500. The more you give, the more good the Salvation Army is able to do. Jim Christensen is in our studio, says here, former client of the Salvation Armies. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show. How are you?
John, nice to meet you.
Where are you from, sir?
Originally from Chicago, South Side.
And do you live in Chicago now?
My wife and I, we live in Frankfort.
Frankfort, Illinois. You got family? You got kids? Tell me about yourself.
Yes, sir. Well, I got 5 children, 4 girls and a boy. And we have 7 grandchildren. The 8th is on its way.
Wow. What do you do for a living?
I'm owner of Beggar's Pizza in Oak Lawn, Illinois.
Oh, no kidding. I know the name of that place. I don't know if I've been in there. Beggar's Pizza in Oak Lawn.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that. What's good at your joint?
Oh, well, of course the pizza.
Yeah.
But I mean, we take pride in everything. I think everything is good. I've been with Beggar's for over 40 years.
Is that a franchise or is that a local?
I'm a franchise,
yes. Yeah, franchise, yeah. Right. Okay. Because I'm wondering, why do they call it Beggar's? Why do they call it Beggar's Pizza?
The father who started it all, who's gone today, told me, and the sons asked me why. They didn't even know. And you know what? I forgot.
Well, that doesn't matter. I guess the main thing is you got good pizza, Beggar's Pizza.
Yes.
That's all I need to know. But okay, so you're a nice guy, businessman, family man. So how is it that you were a client of the Salvation Army?
Oh, wow. For a good part of my adult life, I battled drugs and alcohol. At one point, well, actually 16 years ago, it got really bad. Crack cocaine and alcohol. I was about to lose everything. My wife was going to leave me. They foreclosed on my home. My children didn't have a lot of respect for me at the time. I had a heart attack that was drug-induced at the age of about 46. And finally, my boss told me, he says, Jim, he says, take a year off of work. He says, get your life in order. He saw how bad things were. And reluctantly, I went into a rehab program, and it was with the Salvation Army. My children's youth minister had a connection with the Waukegan Adult Rehab Center, and they made arrangements for me to go in there. And I went there. I had a few drinks before I went, and they wouldn't let me in because I had alcohol on my breath.
Yeah, sure.
So I walked the streets of Waukegan all night. So it was at the end of February, very cold. So I had a lot of time to do some thinking. And by the time they let me in the morning, I was hungry. I was cold. They offered me some food and a bed. And so I was actually glad to be there. Hmm. And while I was there, I picked up a Bible and I started to read it, and it changed my life. And it's kept me sober ever since. Hmm. And prior to that, I had gone into a rehab for 2 weeks that my wife's insurance would take care of. After the 2 weeks, the insurance ran out. They told me I was cured. And obviously that didn't work. And things got bad. And that's when I went to Salvation Army. Salvation Army didn't ask me for a dime. They even clothed me. They housed me. They gave me a job. You have a work program. I worked in the sorting warehouse for a while. Then I went into the cafeteria to work. And, you know, at that point in my life, it gave me some dignity, too.
Were you living in the Salvation Army then?
Yes,
facility?
Sir. Yeah, for 3 months.
For 3 months you were, so that's inpatient, huh?
Yes, sir.
If you will. I mean, it's not like you're going back out into the world, going home,
right,
visiting with your family.
Right.
What was the difference between the Salvation Army's program and what you'd experienced otherwise?
Without a doubt, it was being faith-based. You know, today Jesus keeps me sober.
Yeah.
You know, I was not accountable to no one.
Were you a religious person before?
I believed in God, but I really didn't have any kind of a relationship
You didn't go to church regularly. You didn't consider yourself a big church guy.
No, maybe at Christmas.
So then I guess it must have been a bit of a surprise to you that you were finding strength in this.
Oh, wow. Yes. I really believe the good Lord spoke to me. He told me that he'd renew my life if I would serve him. And he kept his promise, and I kept mine.
How humbling or humiliating was it to you were a guy, you were out, you had a life, you had family, you had friends, and now you're living in a Salvation Army facility?
It was during my 25th wedding anniversary also. It was very humbling, very humbling. I was the number one manager at the restaurant, and when I came back from rehab, I was basically kind of a well-dressed busboy, and it was very humbling. But I knew God had a plan for my life, and today I own the restaurant.
Hmm. And it's funny because obviously you found sobriety and also faith.
Yes, sir.
The Salvation Army does not require, as I understand it, that I have a religious conversion. Right. I mean, they're a faith-based organization, but you don't have to subscribe to the Salvation Army, right? You don't have to join the church, per se.
They didn't ask me what I believed before I came in there, and that was my choice.
Yeah.
They, it was there if you wanted it, but yes, they were there to help you as a person.
So I understand. So some people talk like you, and they say, Jesus is with me every day, and other people just say, thank you, Salvation Army.
Sure.
I don't care. I don't know that you care either, as long as it's effective and it's helpful. Hold on one second. LFI, I'm listening to stuff in my ears that probably isn't helpful. I don't need to hear that. So you get out and then go back to work and then just start to build your career back up, huh?
I got out of Salvation Army and went to Phoenix, Arizona. And my sister is a God-fearing woman. And I served in her church for another couple months. And then I went back home. And
Did your family say when you came out? Did they trust that you were going to be you, or did they accept the new you? Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
No, because I had really burned all my bridges, especially with my wife. I told her, I says, I'd be willing to, if you never trust me again, if you would take me back. But within just a couple of months, she saw something in me. And I knew the day when she gave me the PIN number for our credit card, I knew that she would trust me again.
Wow. How many kids you say you have?
Five.
Yeah. What were their ages when you went into rehab with the Salvation Army?
Well, gosh, 16 years ago, my son was 16 years old.
Wow.
All the way up to about, they'll kill me if I get it wrong. The way up to about 30.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they must have been very proud of you, too, when you got out.
I think they were.
Not easy to do.
And we're never too old to, not have our children be proud of us, too, though we're proud of our children.
Well, and I also think if people have in mind, well, what's the typical Salvation Army client? Like, who do they help? And we might think of the people on the street who don't have food or children who don't have toys. But you weren't any of those people.
No.
You're a businessman on the South Side. You've got a family. You've got a job. You're successful. Drugs and alcohol take over your life.
Yes.
And lo and behold, the Salvation Army is there to reclaim you.
It rescued me.
I just think of all of the value that the Salvation Army brings to Chicago that we just don't think about sometimes. People getting out of jail who are worried that they're going to relapse in their criminal ways. What are we doing to help those people? The Army has a program. We talked about trafficking of humans last week. That's something you and I have the luxury of not having to think about much, but think how devastating that is to people. And none of this happens without the funds that the Army operates with. So on my page, WGNRadio.com, on the John Williams page, you can make your donation there. You and I don't know each other. We look alike. We could. We're kind of, middle-aged guys.
Sure.
And I think it takes a lot of courage and honesty on your part to come in and tell this story to us today.
Well, the Salvation Army saved my life. I know I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for what they did to me and for me. And and we're big supporters today because, that program didn't cost me anything, but I know someone paid for it.
Yeah, no kidding.
They fed me, they clothed me for 3 months.
Hmm.
And so someone paid for it. So if I could help today and help someone else that needs that program, then that's what I want to do.
Jim Christensen, former client of the Salvation Army, still doing a lot of good in the community. Jim, thanks for coming in, and happy holidays to your family.
You. And you too. Thank you very much.
Yeah. WGNRadio.com, John Williams page. Can you make a donation right now?